The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
For a million reasons, petty, shallow, and primal, Trump does not want to go to jail.
His hair, his makeup,
his skin,
like he will be pulled apart. He doesn't have the metal to do it. So anybody that's out there saying, oh, it's a great moment for him, and this is not a mugshot. This is jail. And Donald Trump is terrified. You've got to believe just by his issues with odors and smells and you know, fear of disease. This guy does not want to spend 30. Nobody does, but particularly this guy.
The idea that Donald Trump actually would want to go to jail is ridiculous. Anyone who knows him knows that. He doesn't even like to stay in a hotel when he goes on foreign trips when he went as president.
He wear a jumpsuit? And like, if he went to Rikers, what would that look like?
It would depend on how long he was there.
And he'd have Secret Service with him.
He would have Secret Service.
I shouldn't laugh.
Yes, you have this Democrat Manhattan judge who donated to Biden and whose adult daughter, Lauren Michonne, is raising millions of dollars off of this case, working with a Biden Democrat political appointee and Democrat National Committee consultant, Matthew Colangelo, to illegally gag a criminal defendant during his trial while they let Michael Cohen, a disbarred attorney and perjurer, go on TikTok and make money trashing Trump. And if Trump mentions any of that, this judge is threatening to put Trump in jail. This is clearly unconstitutional. This is clearly lawfare and Democrat election interference.
And every time they try to do something to Trump, it just helps him. And I hope they do arrest Trump. I hope they put him in jail because that does guarantee that he wins. Please, please, please. This is becoming the greatest third act of any political story. It's focusing and sharpening Trump. He comes out of the gate like a bronco, ready to just roar. And it's working. I mean, man, it's like he's up.
Well, I think it'd be politically disastrous for Democrats to have Donald Trump be put in jail over this. I think it would just cause more scrutiny for this case, which is very politicized. I don't see how that helps them politically. I think the judge is backing himself into a bad corner by continuing to draw a line in the sand that I think he really doesn't want to cross with these threats of incarceration. The judge doesn't want Trump talking about the fact that the judge's daughter is a political operative for the Democrats who gets a lot of money working for people who define themselves by how much they loathe Trump. I think that's problematic for the judge, and he doesn't want Trump talking about it. So he's pretextually saying that Trump is threatening witnesses, which Trump isn't doing, so that he has an excuse to tamp down that line of argument by Trump.
The lawfare continues. You can see, just as we were discussing with Dinesh D'Souza yesterday, our special guest on yesterday's program, you see how they are relying on this because they believe Trump's coming back. If they just let it play out, Trump's coming back. So they've got to send him off to prison. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. As you know, you should know, you can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. We continue to get some good promotion from Rumble in ways that we never, ever, ever did at YouTube. At YouTube, I mean, we were being shadow banned. A lot of people are over at YouTube. So it is nice. We're hoping actually to, when we spend some time in Florida with Celtic Throne, we're hoping to get to meet with the producers or the creators of Rumble when we're out there. To this point, I mean, we've got it on our own website as well, and we'll probably keep it there as our home site, because you never know what will happen when someone else controls the content. But right now, it's nice to see a content platform that really is giving us a nice bit of promotion. Lots to get to on today's show. Still some carryover momentum from our two-day blitz with Dinesh D'Souza. We've got 15 minutes of that Sunday evening address reserved for you at the end of today's show. Don't forget about tomorrow's program. More from our exclusive sit-down interview on the Trumpet Daily. We pre-recorded that segment mostly on Barack Hussein Obama's rage, the roots of his rage, to use the language that Dinesh used to title his book back in 2010. So that, I don't have the exact time, but that's going to go for most of tomorrow's program. On today's show, as I say, we'll give you a little bit of the intro, the first 15 minutes of his address the other night at Armstrong Auditorium. We also, if we have time to squeeze it in, we've got some Celtic Throne feedback, a couple minutes of that. That's always exciting to hear. Make sure you go to CelticThrone.com to get a read on where the performers will be showing up all throughout the Southeast and then the Southwest. So they're about to take off. We're in the final couple of days of classes here at Armstrong College. We've got final exams starting on Thursday, and then, of course, all the graduation festivities in full swing starting at the end of next week. And then after that, the crew leaves, and they perform at a location near you if you live in the Southeast or the Southwest. So make sure that you check that out. Well, if it were fair, if we were living in a fair world, in a fair country, this case, the Manhattan case, it's collapsing before our eyes. And yet the Democrat activist judge, his Democrat activist daughter that's making millions of dollars to get Trump, it continues because they've got to put Trump in jail. They've got to prevent Hitler from coming back into office. Yesterday, the testimony of Jeff McConney. It should, as Sundance said, I mean, it should make this entire case just go away. It's embarrassing. These witnesses are coming before this judge, this jury, and they're basically just confirming that, as Trump said yesterday outside the courtroom, he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything illegal. This guy testifies that he was the one that jotted it down as a legal expense, the so-called hush money. This is from Sundance. It says, in a normally functioning democracy or a constitutional republic, the testimony today by Trump corporate comptroller Jeff McConney would end the ridiculous hush money case. Says McConney testified that he alone was the one who instructed the accounting department to classify payments to Michael Cohen as legal expenses, money that went to Michael Cohen. It says further, this entire premise of the silly New York City case against Donald Trump is predicated on the claim that candidate Trump had the payments classified as legal expenses to hide the hush money payment. See, he did something nefarious by designating it as a legal expense. And so he was trying to hide it. And then that makes it some kind of a campaign violation, campaign finance violation. And then here comes McConney and he testifies, no, I made that decision. So case closed, right? Well, no, not if you're trying to get Trump. Just keep it going. And furthermore, you can threaten him with jail time because he's supposedly violating the gag order. Election interference through and through. Listen to Fox Business as they discuss this collapsing case. Clip 3.
Give us your legal aspect, legal perspective of the Manhattan DA's trial right now for Donald Trump.
It's been a train wreck for the prosecution. Look, every witness that they've called so far has been a witness intending to harm Donald Trump. And in fact, in every instance, they have at least in part helped Donald Trump with his case. And every witness that the state has called so far has also said that the state's most important witness, Michael Cohen, can't be believed, that he is essentially a pathological liar. So if this were a fair judge and a fair jury, the case already would have been dismissed or the case would be decided in the jurors' minds.
What's incredible to me is the left-wing media will not come out and say there is no crime here. And honestly, I've tried to listen to this in a fair-minded way. There is no crime. Yeah. What Trump did is not illegal. So it's incredible that even so-called legal experts talking on Bloomberg over the weekend thought it was perfectly okay that they're humiliating this man, and that is their main objective.
Well, there's no crime. And the star witness for the prosecuting team, he's a liar. He's perjured himself. And yet the lawfare continues right along. You look at the documents case down in Florida, Jack Smith's documents case. We learned earlier this week that the FBI tampered with the evidence. They've had to admit that in court filings. It's unbelievable. And it just continues. This was Donald Trump outside the courtroom yesterday, clip four.
As you know, they've taken away my constitutional rights, so I'm not allowed to answer that question. This has never happened in this country before. It's a ridiculous thing. It's a ridiculous case. I did nothing wrong. Absolutely nothing wrong. They say there's no case here. And yet the judge has gagged me, and I'm not allowed to talk about, I guess, his total conflict. The judge is totally conflict. It's totally conflicted, and you ought to take a look at it. And I'm not supposed to be talking about it, but I am allowed to say that the judge has a conflict that like nobody's ever had before. You ought to take a look at it. He's taken away my constitutional right to speak. Never happened before, ever. Number one. Number two, it's a fake trial. They have no case. And it's been absolutely proven now. They have no case whatsoever. This is Alvin Bragg doing it for political reasons for Biden. This is a Biden trial. He's a crooked president. And I wish people could move a little bit quicker, the appellate courts, because the whole world is watching this and they see what's happening. More importantly, frankly, they have no case. They have absolutely no case. It's a political hoax. It's election interference. Anything they can do. And even the witnesses they want to bring up, they have nothing to do with the case. This is a ridiculous situation. Not fair. Not fair. But we will fight. Thank you.
It's totally unfair. And the thing of it is, Americans see this, but they're not getting into the details of this case. And I think it was McCarthy in that cold open. He's right. The judge is in a difficult position here. He's threatening to put Donald Trump in jail for violating the gag order. And yet if he does that, he knows there's going to be intense scrutiny all of a sudden on this case that he's presiding over. And even the prosecution's witnesses are proving Trump's argument. This documents case, Julie Kelly's right on top of this, what the FBI has admitted in court filings. It says the DOJ's clever wordsmithing, however, did not accurately describe the origin of the cover sheets. Remember how they had the photo op with all the so-called classified documents that we don't even know for sure if Donald Trump may have declassified on the way out. But remember, they threw all of these classified documents onto the floor with these cover sheets. They took a picture of it, and then they showed the whole world. Yeah, look at how careless he is with classified documents. It was all staged. It was perfect theater. And now that's being exposed. It says here, evidence, but willfully misleading the American people into believing the former president is a criminal and a threat to national security. Agents involved in the raid attached the cover sheets to at least 7 files to stage the photo. They set it all up. I mean, you're FBI. How much clearance, by the way, does just your ordinary FBI agent, he's part of a raid. You know, he can walk in there and look through these documents and then put them on the floor and attach a cover sheet and then take a picture? What is going on? You're the FBI. If this is legit, you go in, you get the documents, you take them out. But now it's all staged, just like the Manhattan case. Julie Kelly says classified cover sheets were not recovered in the container, contrary to Bratt's declaration to the court. In fact, after being busted recently by defense attorneys for mishandling evidence in the case, Bratt had to fess up about how the cover sheets actually ended up on the documents. So Bratt, I guess he's part of the prosecution, part of Jack Smith's team. And Kelly quotes him and what the story now is for how these cover sheets appeared. Kelly says here, but before the official cover sheets were used as placeholder, agents apparently used them as props. FBI agents took it upon themselves to paperclip the sheets to documents, something evident given the uniform nature of how each cover sheet is clipped to each file in the photo, laid them on the floor, and snapped a picture for political posterity. It's perfect. We caught him. Donald Trump's a criminal. Never mind all the classified docs that Mike Pence took, Joe Biden, all of them, Barack, the dear leader. But on this, another perfect opportunity to get Trump. Julie Kelly says that raises many troubling questions, to say the least, about the FBI's handling of the alleged incriminating documents. For example, who made the on-site determination as to the classification level appropriate for each document? Who decided this? Donald Trump, for his part, at least he's a former president. He had declassification powers. Says, did agents have security clearance and expertise related to classification? Did the agents know whether the document had been declassified by Trump while still in office? Did they know any of this? I mean, they're just sifting through documents, attaching cover sheets, taking photos, and then distributing it to the world, of course. In the case of this judge, who's evidently not a Democrat activist, Judge Cannon, at least she's giving the light of day to all of this nefarious activity, not from Donald Trump and his team, from Jack Smith's team. That would be Joe Obama's DOJ. Oh, yes. Lawfare of the highest order. It says the hasty assessment also appears to contradict Bratt's statements in court about the classification status of the seized documents. It says Bratt told Judge Eileen Cannon during a hearing last year that the records were undergoing a classification review, presumably conducted by the intelligence community to determine the correct level of secrecy. But now defense attorneys claim, and the special counsel concedes, that some placeholders do not match the relevant document. It's all backfiring, isn't it? And they're being exposed. This is over at Just the News, John Solomon's Just the News. It says, in a new filing Friday, Smith's team said that the order of documents in some of the boxes of memos that were seized by the FBI from Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate was altered or jumbled, leaving two different chronologies, one that was digitally scanned and another the physical order in the boxes. Solomon says here, Smith's team, in a footnote, also conceded it had misled the court about the problem by previously declaring that the evidence had remained in the exact state it had been seized. They lied. They lied to the court. So here's another case that's absolutely collapsing. And as I say, Americans, they know. They know this is a system, not of justice, of injustice. It's lawfare. It's election interference. It's all whatever it takes to get Trump. And yet you look at the polling, as Gutfeld brought out in that cold open, it continues to go up. So much so that some Trump supporters are actually hoping that this crazy judge, this lunatic judge, actually puts him behind bars. And then you see all of the talking heads in the regime media. They're just giddy with delight. What's he going to do? What's he going to do with his hair? What about his skin? Listen to this from ABC. This is some more recent polling. This was ABC over the weekend, clip 17.
And Biden seems to be struggling with key demographic groups that he would need to win and win big if he stands a chance of being reelected.
John, there is significant softness in the support for Joe Biden among core Democrats. In this poll, he's carrying black voters by 61 points. Well, that sounds like a lot, but he carried them by 84 points back in 2020. Latino voters, a very slight Biden edge in this poll, but it was a 21-point advantage in the exit polls back in 2020. And among younger voters under 30, we're actually seeing Trump with a slight edge. That was a big win for Biden last time around. It's particularly stark to see that difference among voters of color. Black voters under age 50, far less likely in this poll to say they're supporting Joe Biden than older black voters.
It's just every single poll that comes out nowadays. Blacks, Hispanics, young people, all of these demographics that Biden won or was getting a huge, huge chunk of just 3 years ago. Now they're swinging over in the direction of Donald Trump. This is from the Washington Examiner. I might have touched on this last week, but it says here, 2/3 of registered voters in swing states rejected Joe Biden's climate policy restrictions on appliances, even if they resulted in a reduction in energy costs for consumers. That's according to a new poll. Polls showing that people don't like, a large majority of Americans don't like Joe Obama's policies. Only 28% of voters in the poll supported government restrictions on appliances. Is this an administration? Barack Obama's the puppet master, as we discussed yesterday with the conservative author, Dinesh D'Souza. They know Americans hate their policies. And this is why more and more the strategy is to put Joe back in the basement. He's got a campaign. He needs to come out from time to time, say a few things. They've got to be pre-prepared remarks. But that's it. And they're out there saying that this is the strategy. This is the way we want it. In fact, Jesse Waters made a pretty funny point about how that their goal, in a literal sense, is to gag Donald Trump to prevent him from talking. And then at the same time, their strategy for Joe Biden is to gag him as well. What kind of world are we living in? This is the United States of America. Listen to Jesse Waters from yesterday, clip 2.
Isn't Joe Biden's campaign admitting that Joe Biden is incapable of campaigning the way a president should?
Yeah, I mean, the Democrats have gagged both candidates. They won't let Trump talk because he tells the truth, and won't let Biden talk because he tells stories about his uncle being eaten by cannibals.
Our campaign believes in quality over quantity. We believe that these touches, these smaller things that are getting directly to the point about what is going on in the stakes of this election are going to be easier for voters to tap into.
Quality over quantity? Since when is less Biden better quality? Usually when you like something, you don't want less of it. The media thinks hiding Biden's brilliant because his handlers can control him like a puppet.
To be honest with you, Quentin, I think that's a very smart idea. I think
for everyone.
I appreciate that approach because it is a way for the president to sort of hit with clarity, stick his points and move on and not get lost and sidetracked.
Now, the media believes a puppet reading from a script has a better shot beating Trump than the real Joe Biden. The Biden campaign prefers a quiet puppet, and the media agrees.
Hiding Biden. That's the strategy. They prefer the puppet. Just come out for a few appearances and make sure all of his remarks are scripted. And as you know, even when he's reading his remarks, a lot of times he'll read, you know, the simple statements or commands that now's the time to leave or whatever. It's a disaster. And they know it. But they're out there saying it's brilliant. What a strategy. What is wrong with these people? Listen, and they trot out the Republicans in name only, the never Trumpers, to support this kind of craziness. It's just deranged reasoning on every level. This was the former lieutenant governor, Jeff Duncan. We've played clips from him before, talking about just how perfect the election was in Georgia 3 years ago. As Dinesh D'Souza brought out, yesterday. I mean, that's now obviously a lie. A lie, whether it's because of the mules or the machines or the censorship. Listen to Jeff Duncan on CNN from earlier today, clip one.
Well, enough's enough. Donald Trump is not our future. He's not our present. And now looking back, he certainly wasn't our past. Donald Trump's a fake Republican. He's proven that over and over and over again. He simply wants the position of president to be powerful. And he's willing to lie, cheat, and steal for it. And if we're going to fix this party and go forward, the party that is conservative but not crazy and angry, we've got to do it without Donald Trump. And I know it makes sense to try to elect a Republican to be the president, but if we can get past Donald Trump, have a Republican-controlled Congress, we can have a firewall in place, and then we can take the next 4 years to fix our party and get a legitimate candidate forward that can lead us in the right direction.
In other words, vote for Biden and just try to get through another 4 years of this, and then we can fix our party 4 years from now. I mean, CNN loves guests like this. They're all over the place. At CNN, MSNBC, Washington Post, New York Times. I talked a fair bit about this with Dinesh D'Souza just in our private conversations. And yeah, he's these idiots are all over the place, he was saying. They're all over the place. And they actually believe, as you heard right there, that 4 more years of Biden is better than 4 years of Trump. Because Trump, what did he say? Trump lies, cheats, and steals. Here are all these gangsters lying, stealing, cheating, tampering with evidence, creating a crime out of nothing in Manhattan. And we're supposed to believe that that it's Trump who's dishonest, that it's Trump who's lying and cheating. Trump is telling the truth, like Jesse Waters said there. And they want to gag him because he tells the truth, because he fights back as well. They really hate him for that. This is a story we had a week or so ago. I haven't had time to get to. It's from April 30th. It's from Brad Raffensperger. All these rhinos that run the election in Georgia, including Jeff Duncan, as you just heard there. He knew he wasn't going to get reelected, so he decides to retire, but he still has the cushy job appearing on CNN from time to time. Raffensperger writes this: I believe American citizens should decide American elections. A majority of voters on both sides of the aisle agree. Unfortunately, a small cohort of liberal activists is intent on making non-citizen voting a reality. Uh-oh. You mean, are you saying that there's some liberal activists that are trying to cheat? Well, you told us 3 years ago that that never would happen. It was a perfect election. And now here he is admitting, well, this is just the way the Marxist left operates. They lie, they cheat, they steal. They tamper with evidence. It says here, progressives have pushed for such measures in California, the District of Columbia, Maryland, Vermont, and New York. Further on, this is Brad Raffensperger. He's presiding over the election in Georgia. Liberals want us to believe that non-citizen voting doesn't happen, and yet they continue to sue to make it harder to prevent. Why? They know they need only one left-leaning judge to overturn a state law. Well, that sounds very different than what he was saying just a few years ago when he said everything was perfect. I'm a good Republican. It was all fair and above board here in Georgia. And now here he writes this op-ed saying that, yeah, you know, the progressives cheat. And all they know that all they have to do is just get one activist judge on their side. And this is exactly what's happening in a different way, but it's exactly what's happening in the Manhattan trial. And this Democrat that's issued these gag orders because he doesn't want the world to understand that his daughter is a Democrat activist making money off of Get Trump. I mean, this man's compromised through and through. Should have recused himself a long time ago. But no, it continues. The lawfare continues. The system of injustice continues. When we have When we come back, I should say, we have a lot of positive things to pass along to you. You look at the, you get back into the news and it can be just a little bit negative and discouraging at times. But a lot of these attacks, as I keep saying, they are backfiring. And God's hand is at work. If you don't have America under attack, by the way, you can get God's perspective on these many attacks happening right now in the United States of America. The attack is from within. You heard Dinesh D'Souza yesterday talk about the differences between Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump, and how that Reagan was confronting an enemy abroad during his presidency in the 1980s. But with Trump, it's different because the enemy is at home. The enemy is from within. To order your free copy of America Under Attack, just call our 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. When we come back, what will we do? We've got some feedback from Celtic Throne the other night. And then also we'll lead into the first 15 minutes of Dinesh D'Souza's public address on Sunday evening. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
I thought it looked good.
It was fantastic. A very great experience.
It was great.
Very powerful.
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. My roots are Australian, Scottish, English, and a little Irish. So this is just a feast for me.
It is mesmerizing. It's just amazing.
Great. Is this your first time watching it?
Second time. We just had to come back.
Choreography's good. Their coordination, timing, everything's really good, especially for as young as they are. They're extremely talented.
It's magical. I didn't expect there to be so many kids, which was really exciting, and the choreography is just so well done. What do you think, darling?
It was the best.
Oh, wow. It's amazing. Mind blown.
A lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, and it was really a great show to watch every time.
The show is brilliant. It's always very good.
How many times have you seen it?
3 times.
It was fun.
What's the favorite part you've seen so far?
When the kids came out.
The show is fantastic so far, and I'm sure the second half will be even better.
Yeah, love the show. Greatest thing out there.
I loved it.
It was awesome.
Gets better every time.
It was great.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was fantastic. Seeing it for the first time in person, the emotion and seeing it at home in this house is just incredible.
We thought it was amazing. After the first dance, Aubrey, my daughter, was saying, is there more? Is there more? I was like, oh, there's going to be more. She loved it. So we both loved it.
What did you think?
It was good.
Came all the way from New York to see this show and to see the exhibit here. It's awesome. It's a beautiful show.
We enjoyed it a bunch.
It was jaw-dropping.
What was your favorite part?
The ending.
I love the patriotism and bringing the family and didn't have to worry about anything. And so that was very enjoyable. We came from Texas come and visit our family and to see this. Yeah. So, yeah, we enjoyed it a lot.
Probably the fourth or fifth one we've seen. And it's always amazing. Never ceases to shed a tear or bring us to some pretty awesome emotions on that. That's a wonderful show.
It was wonderful, really emotional in such a beautiful way and really inspiring as well. Definitely we'll be coming back for Celtic Throne too.
Well, it's a fantastic show. I mean, beautiful music, wonderful performances, amazing to see the coordination, the amount of work that goes into it. So I'm just thrilled to be here and enjoy it.
There you go. That last bit, you probably recognized the voice. That was Dinesh D'Souza himself. He saw the show with us on Sunday afternoon before he gave that public address. And Sam just pointed out to me that I'm drinking coffee today from the Celtic Throne mug. We've got Celtic Throne memorabilia as well if you come to the show. CelticThrone.com. That gives you the rundown where they're going to be. I've pulled it up just now. May 23rd, that's Shreveport, Louisiana. Then they go to Baton Rouge and then Mobile, Alabama. And then three performances in the state of Florida. So CelticThrone.com takes you to all the information that you're looking for this summer's tour. The fifth summer that they'll be touring with this show, and we're of course hard at work on Celtic Throne Part 2 as well, and we hope to premiere that sometime early next year. Some good feedback coming in response to Dinesh D'Souza's address in Armstrong Auditorium on Sunday, and also in response to the program. This one here, an email from someone just came in a bit ago. It says, wow, what a fabulous interview with Mr. D'Souza. Keeping the childlike curiosity to be able to find and receive true education. She's talking about the last 6 or 7 minutes on yesterday's show. We went a little overtime. But I wanted to ask him, you know, what would you suggest for young people today? I mean, given the state of higher education, what do you suggest that they delve into, or how do they further their education in a world where there's so much propaganda and so much deception? Those last 7 minutes, I encouraged my students this morning to go back and look at that. But it says here, even for basic physical knowledge, it's an attribute that we have learned that we have to have. How much more for spiritual knowledge from God? It made me smile and think about this again all day. How important it is to become and stay childlike with hungry curiosity and to dig out the treasure from God, including his biblical archaeology. I mean, really, it applies to every subject. But she's right, especially for the spiritual knowledge that we need. You look at Matthew 5, you look at Hosea 4, I mean, God's people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Matthew 5 says that we ought to hunger and thirst for righteousness. Hunger and thirst after God's truth. Feed on it. Dine on it daily. You study through John 6, where it talks about manna from heaven, and God is giving us spiritual manna. With all of this wonderful knowledge that he is admonishing us to put to use. To conclude today's program, speaking of Mr. D'Souza's remarks yesterday on this show, don't forget about tomorrow's show, another special edition of the Trumpet Daily. Our interview with Dinesh D'Souza continues. But for the rest of this show, we'll conclude today's show with Mr. D'Souza's address from Sunday evening. This is clip six.
Thank you very much. Wow. Just checking out this incredible podium. They asked me, actually, would I rather speak behind the podium? And I just realized that if I did, I wouldn't even need to wear pants. I'm just honored and delighted to be here. This event came about almost accidentally. I got a letter from the college and from the church about the archaeological exhibit, and somehow the archaeological exhibit and the Celtic throne and then my speaking sort of all fell together, and it's been just a jam-packed day and a lot of fun. In fact, I'm thinking I'm not leaving. If you see me on campus like 3 days from now. Well, there's a lot to talk about, and the country is at a very important inflection point this year. Sometimes when I think about America 2024, my mind flashes back to when I first came to America. I was 17 years old, and I still remember the first kind of look at it, which was New York City. I was on my way to Arizona as an exchange student, but I remember the New York skyline, I remember the Statue of Liberty, and I remember as the airplane kind of descended, I kind of had this really strange feeling that I was moving from the corner of the world, in my case, Mumbai, India, to the center. And I knew as a teenager, even though I wasn't political in any way, that I was coming to a country where if I stayed, my life would be completely different from that moment on. I recognized that I was coming to a country where I could be the architect of my own destiny. America is a country where you can be in the driver's seat of your own life, where your destiny isn't given to you. It is, to a large degree, constructed by you. It's almost like your life is a blank sheet of paper, and you are the artist. So this is a very exhilarating idea in America. The American dream. As far as I know, no other country really has a dream of this kind. I mean, I know the dream of my generation growing up in India was pretty much how to get the heck out of India. This was India in the 1970s. It's a lot different now. But then, as far as I know, the Chinese don't have a dream. The French may have a dream, but I'm not really, I want to know what it is. but we have an American dream. And I was eager to discover it, experience it. When I was in Arizona, I lived with a host family and went to a public school, the 12th grade. And my host parents were like, Dinesh, welcome to America. You're in Arizona. We've got all this sightseeing planned for you. We're going to take you to the Grand Canyon. We're going to take you to Tombstone, Arizona, which is the site of the gunfight at the OK Corral. And I was like, guys, this sounds amazing, but my idea of sightseeing is like, take me to the local supermarket. Like, I want to check out 17 types of cheese and like 40 types of ice cream. So, for me, the original appeal of America was abundance. And not just abundance, but the abundance available to the ordinary guy. My point being that the rich guy kind of lives well anywhere. Everybody kind of knows that. In fact, if you're really rich, you can live better outside of America. Why? Because you can have the pleasures of aristocracy, of being a truly superior human being. In America, you don't get that. You don't get that even if you're Bill Gates or Elon Musk. Like Bill Gates could walk, you know, let's say go to the Oklahoma City airport and say, listen, I'll give you $100 if you kiss both my feet. Most people wouldn't go for it. Why? Because it's like, hey, Bill, you may have more money, but you know, you're not better than me. That's the American way of thinking. I was really amazed by the fact that in America, even if you're not that smart and not that hardworking either, you still have a pretty good life. I'm like, wow, look at that guy. He's got literally nothing going for him. And yet, he has a two-car garage. He has a really nice house. He's even got a small pool in his backyard. I'm like, wow. I have an acquaintance in Bombay, India, who has been trying to come to America, evidently without success, for now many, many years. I guess I should just tell him to come to the southern border, you know, like practice your backstroke. But one day, I said to this guy, I was like, why are you so eager to come to America? He goes, Dinesh, I really want to move to a country where the poor people are fat. And again, the most obvious appeal of America is the abundance of the country. But I think that the true appeal of America, bigger than that, is the notion of not just dreaming the American dream, but experiencing it, living it, doing things with your life that you otherwise couldn't do. Sometimes, for example, I'm sitting in, you know, in LA, I'm sitting around at Lionsgate with a bunch of these Lionsgate movie producer guys, and I say to myself, wow, I mean, this is not something I would have imagined growing up in India. Not only not imagined it, you can't really aspire to it because people think you're out of your mind. Like if I went to my grandfather and said, you know, I'm thinking about like making a Hollywood movie. He'd be like, he'd call in my grandmother, take this young boy's temperature. He's obviously got a fever. So the aspiration, the ability to do things with life, this is American exceptionalism. This is American exceptionalism, not in a sort of, it's the Constitution, it's the Declaration of Independence, it's the documents. It's not the documents. It's the lived American life that is created by having a certain type of a society. Now, if I were giving you this talk 10 years ago, it would have continued in this vein. But, going back now about a decade, having experienced the American dream, I also got a kind of a good taste, maybe an unpleasant taste, but a very interesting taste of, let's call it, the other America. So what's the other America? The other America, from my point of view, from like an immigrant's point of view, is standing up in a courtroom and hearing a bailiff say the following words, United States of America versus Dinesh D'Souza. Yikes. This is not what any immigrant wants to hear. And I find myself in a federal criminal courtroom. By the way, looking back on it now, my case was a little bit of a harbinger, a little bit of a preview. Later on, we'd see a lot of the same. Carter Page, Papadopoulos, Michael Flynn, Donald Trump. It's become very familiar, January 6th. But at the time that I was hauled into court, which is 2013, all of this was kind of new. In fact, I wasn't even sure quite what's going on. I just released my movie on Obama. It was, I admit, a very emotionally damaging movie to Obama. Why? Because instead of making the normal type of movie, 7 Reasons Why Obamacare is Bad, I'm like, no, I'm going to go into Obama's world, and I'm going to go into Obama's head, and I'm going to upset him. I'm going to discombobulate him. I'm going to drive him nuts. And so I went to Hawaii, I went to Indonesia, I went to Kenya, I went to Obama's family homestead. I asked for an interview with his grandmother, and she's like, I can give you the interview, but you have to bring me a goat. And so if you watch 2016 Obama's America, you will see me dragging a very unwilling goat to the interview. And then I find Obama's brother in the slums of Nairobi living in a hut, kind of like Slumdog Millionaire style. You know, and the reason this is interesting is Obama was going all around the country and the world preaching, we are our brother's keeper. And so here you have this guy walking through like muck on the ground, as you know, his little hut, you could stretch your two arms and you would touch the walls. You know, and here I am asking him, hey George, you know, we are our brother's keeper. What's your brother done for you? Nothing. So this stuff is very damaging because it exposes hypocrisy. So, and this is probably the naivete of the immigrant, I should have known there was a big target on my back. You know, the Empire Strikes Back. But even today when I speak on the campus, young people will come up to me, they'll be like, oh, Dinesh, I mean, come on. What makes you think Obama's going to retaliate against you for your movie? What makes you think he even saw your stupid movie? I'm like, well, when the movie came out, it was in 2,000 theaters. It was seen by millions of people, and I was being attacked every day by name on a website called barackobama.com. So that's where I got the crazy idea that maybe I upset the vindictive narcissist in the White House. Now, the remarkable thing about this is that in trying to help a college friend of mine who was running for office, I did in fact exceed the campaign finance law. I exceeded the amount you're allowed to give. I didn't do it maliciously, but I did do it. So here I am sitting across from these lawyers from the DOJ. And it's not Eric Holder. Obama kind of keeps himself clean, you know, personally. So in fact, there's an Indian guy, Preet Bharara, head of the SDNY, the Southern District of New York, the same district that, by the way, is going after Trump. So this Indian guy, I'm like, an Indian guy? Wow. These days I call him Indian head waiter, Preet Bharara. In any event, I'm sitting across from these lawyers of DOJ, and they're like, did you exceed the campaign finance laws? And I go, yeah, I didn't mean to, but I did. And I said, so I should probably get the same penalty as anybody else who did the same thing. And they're like, not so fast. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? They're like, we are going to get you on bank fraud. I'm like, bank fraud? They're like, yeah, because you took your money out of your bank account. And I'm like, what? They're like, we're also going to get you on mail fraud. I'm like, mail fraud? They're like, yeah, because you put your check in the mail. And so I turn to my lawyer and I'm like, what's going on here? And he's like, what these guys are doing is they are using laws that were passed to go after ISIS and the mafia to go after you. And so then it crossed my mind that from their point of view, I wasn't like a dissident, a critic. No, I was an enemy. And they wanted to take me out. In other words, I realized that from these guys' point of view, if they could have put me in federal prison for 20 years for doing what I did, which is a big nothing. No American in the whole country's history has ever been prosecuted for my offense. But if they could do that, they would do it. And so, right away, my civics book idea of America began to be questioned.